begins with that we're done. Shenasula avotenu b'mitzrayim v'asara layam. We're keeping track of the earlier Mishnayot. So we spoke earlier about the 10 nisyonot of Avraham, and then the nisim. Second, I'm ahead of myself. Right. Right, the Nisim Shenasu Lavotinu B'Mitzrayim V'Asara Alayam. How does this connect to the Mishnayot that we saw before? The Mishnah right before that we saw yesterday was about Avraham Avinu and his 10 Nisyonot. So the juxtaposition could lead one to believe that the Nisim that were done to our ancestors were Bizchut, the Nisyonot that Avraham passed. And that's indeed what said in Avot Rabbi Natan, the second source on page 311. Keneged Efer Nisyonot Shenit Nasa Avraham Avinu Uvekulam Nimtza Shalem. Uchenegdan asa Kadosh Baruch Hu Yud Nisim Levanav Mitzrayim Kenegdan Hivi Esher Makot Kenegdan Nasul Yisrael Asaran Nisim Alayam Kenegdan Hivi Esher Makot Al Mitzrim Bayam, etc. All these things that were done for the Jewish people begin with Avraham's passing of the tests. The question about this mission, the key question is, what are the nisim that were done for the Jewish people in Mitzrayim and at Yamsuf? Meaning we're aware of the makot that were done to the Egyptians. There are different versions of the Mishnah, whether you have the next line. Eser makot hevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Mitzrim b'Mitzrayim ve'eser al hayam. That we're familiar with. Although we may not be fully familiar with the eser makot that were done on the Yam. If we remember from the Seder nights, we're used to thinking it's much more than 10. The Rambam relates to that point and he says, and if you look at the bottom of page 311, that there were 10 types of makot at Yam Suf. And so really you could say 10, because ultimately there were 10 types. But the bigger question going back is, what were the nisim that were done for the Jewish people? That's why Rashi says, third source on page 311, Asara nisim nasu la'avotenu b'mitzrayim v'asara layam, lo nitparshu lanu. We've never heard of these. The Rambam writes in his Pirush HaMishnayot that the nisim that were done to the Jewish people are parallel to the makot, because part of the nace was that not only did God strike out at the Egyptians, but the Jews were not included in the Makot, which is a double nace. A, what happened to the Egyptians, and B, the fact that the Jewish people weren't included. And that we should appreciate that special status that the Jewish people had. Later on, the Rambam relates to the Nisim at Yamsuf, and he quotes the Misorah about these Nisim. What were the 10 things done for the Jewish people midway through the peace? Splitting the water for them, right? How easy, relatively easy it was for them to pass through, that it was done in a way that eased their passage through Yamsuf. Avot to Rabbi Natan, the bottom of page 311, takes it a step further, and it says, Asara nisim nasu la'avotenu b'mitzrayim, v'asara alayam, lehodia chibatan shel Yisrael. These words make this Mishnah similar to
Avraham.
To what we saw by Avraham, right? Avraham passed the 10 tests in the Mishnah before, and we're told the tests, lehodia chibato shel Avraham avinu. So here, and clearly it's talking not about the chibah that the Jews have for God, but the chibah that God has for the Jews, and it's lehodia chibatan shel Yisrael, how God loved them, all these things he did on their behalf. So on the one hand, it may be bizchut, the nisyonot that Avraham passes. On the other hand, this leads to a love that God has for the Jewish people. And that's why the end of the Mishnah is such a contrast. Because we began with the nisyonot of Avraham, the nisim in the Midbar, and now, the end of Mishnah Dal, going back to the top, page 311, Asara nisyonot, nisu avotenu et hamakom baruch hu b'midbar. Here we're talking about not nisyonot that Hashem tests man, but nisyonot of man testing God. This obviously is not a good thing. What's the source for this? Shenamar, and the reason we have a source is because this is not something that's beferish in the Torah, right? That's why the Mishnah has to tell you where we know it. This pasuk is God's says it to Moshe when? What context?
Is it after Egil Hazahav?
Bamidbar Perek Yudalad, right? Could have even cheated. It's after the Meraglim. He's talking about how they're going to be punished, because the Cheder Meraglim isn't just a terrible Cheder on its own, but it's an accumulation of all of these tests of God, so to speak. There's one place in the Torah where the Torah describes the Jewish people as having tested God. Meaning, we saw by Avram that it says that Hashem tested Avram 10 times. And which test did we see was the model by Avram?
Akedah,
where it actually uses the term test. Here too, there's one place where the Torah uses the word test. And where's that? Let's take a look at page 312. Happy nobody cheated. You know. Let's take a look at page 312. It says that the Jewish people arrived at Rephidim. So you can see why that's important. And they complained to Moshe that they didn't have water. Now this seems very normal, and we know it from many places in the Midbar. But here, the place gets a name. Pasuk Zayin. Vayikra Shem HaMakom Masah U'Meriva. Other places weren't called this. Al Riv B'nei Yisrael, that would be the Meriva. Va'al Nasotam Et Hashem. This is described as the Jewish people testing God. Le'mor Hayesh Hashem B'kirbeinu Imayim. I think there's the answer. There's two kinds of circumstances when the Jewish people complain. One is they complain, they had a problem. That was many times. But this was unique in that it was a situation where they doubted God's relationship with them. Or they could doubt God's ability. And I think that this is why the very next pasuk describes something that takes place, and it links it to the story before through the place. It says, pasuk chet, v'yavo Amalek, immediately, suddenly, right after this pasuk, there's a gap, just so we can see that it's a new point, but it's the next pasuk. V'yilochem im Yisrael b'refidim. We know they're in Refidim, right? I think it stresses it again to connect it back to the story that happened before. One can suggest that the attack of Amalek comes because the Jewish people doubt God in their midst. How can God show them that He's in their midst? By them needing Him. What happens? Amalek attacks. It's very painful. And the whole thing is done with the Yadav Shel Moshe. Right, as the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah. Right, the hands of Moshe make or break war. The hands of Moshe was just supposed to be a directive guide, right? That they should realize, as the hands are upward, that it's Hashem who's fighting the war for them. And after they're victorious, there's the Mesorah, Pasuk Yudalid, writing it down as a memory to erase Amalek, Pasuk Tetvav, Vayiven Moshe Mizbeach, Vayikra Shmo Hashem Nisi, interesting relationship with Nasotam et Hashem, Vayomer Ki Yad Al Keis Kat, Milchama LaHashem BaAmalek Midor Dor. How does Hashem get into this war? Why does Hashem have a war with Amalek? What does Hashem have to do with this? And the answer, of course, is because Amalek
hurt the Jews.
Attack the Jewish people, and God is within the Jewish people. So if someone attacks the Jewish people, it's like they attack God. Yesh Hashem b'kirbeinu. That's the answer to the Nisayon. And this becomes the source for the Lota, say in the Torah, Dvarim Perek Vav, Lo tenasu et Hashem Elokeichem kasher nisitem b'masa. I think the reason this is the model of testing God is because it wasn't just a complaint. Complaining is bad, but not the same thing. Now one could say all the complaints were this on some level. But I think this is identified that way because it was expressed clearly. The Gemara in Erechin gives us a list of the full 10 tests. Shnayim bayam, shnayim bamayim, shnayim baman, shnayim baslav, achat be'egel ve'achat bamidbar paran. The shnayim bayam, the Gemara says, we shouldn't have other angles on this. One was the initial doubt of God saving them at Yansuf, and then when they came out, Chazal tell us that they doubted whether the Mitzrayim were really swallowed up by Yansuf, to the point where God had to get the Yam to spit them out, so the Jews would believe that they were gone. Shnayim b'mayim, they complained twice about water. Shnayim b'man, they complained twice about man. Shnayim b'slav, twice about having food, which led to the slav. Be'egel, of course, we know. What's Midbar Paran? That's where the Jews were when they sent out the Meraglim. The The Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer has an interesting spin on how all this fits into the flow of the Mishnayot that we were talking about. Because up to this point, it made a lot of sense. We had the Eser Dorot from Noach to Avraham, where Hashem is Erech HaPayim, where Avram is getting the reward, a tzaddik who's Mekayim Es HaOlam, and then Bizchut Avram's, why is Avram so great? Because he passed the 10 tests, and Bizchut the 10 tests, all those great things were done for his children. How did the Nisyonot fit in? So look at the bottom of page 312. It says, Asara Nisyonot Nasa Avraham Avinu Ve'amad Bukulam. V'tzafui haya lefanav. God saw in advance, Sha'atidin banav lenasot la'kadosh Hu Eser Nisyonot. God knew that the Jewish people would act this way. And therefore, hiktim refuah lemakatam. V'nisau ba'asara nisyonot. God gave Avram the 10 tests, intending for him to pass them in a way that they could serve as a counterbalance for the terrible chilul Hashem of the Jewish people testing God. And especially based upon what we said, that Avraham Avinu, these passing of the nisyonot becomes part of our genetic legacy. So even though we falter and we, so to speak, test God, we have within us, as a people, having succeeded at God's tests of us through Avraham Avinu. Okay, questions about Mishnah Dalet. So moving right along, Mishnah Hey, right? We're going to get some done. All right. Mishnah Hey is about the 10 Nisim Shenasu La'avotenu Bevet HaMikdash. Now, if you're keeping track of the Mishnayot, we had the Nisyonot al Avraham, and then the Nisim in the Midbar. Then again, Nisyonot, this time of the Jews of God, and now again, so it's A-B-A-B. Right? The Nisim now, done to the Mikdash. And that could explain why there's a similar formulation. Remember what it said by Mitzrayim, the first mission we saw tonight, the Asara Nisim Nasu, you can look back at page 311, La'avotenu, here too, Asara Nisim Nasu, La'avotenu, even though at first glance, it's hard to see exactly how things in the Mikdash are connected to Avotenu. I mean, it's not a kasha, but I think we can understand better because of the parallel. The 10 things are listed here, and we can go through them, but of course, the first thing we notice is the fact that they're listed. In all of the Mishnayot up to this point, were they ever listed? Were the 10 Doro told us, the 10 Nisyonot, and in fact, we saw a discussion amongst the commentaries of exactly what's included. Why are they specified here? Another difference, I would say, also, is that these things are not nisim gluim. Right? The nisim in Mitzrayim were very clear. These are things that are very, very much more derech hateva. And I think the reason they're specified is because we don't have any source for them. You want to find the nisyonot. Okay, look in the Torah. You want to find the 10 Torah. Look in the Torah. That's the point made by the Maral in his Pirush Derech HaChaim. He makes a number of points. But the ultimate teretz he gives is to otam shalom anautam, the earlier Mishnah, hanu shemuvuarim bakatuv, because they're written beferish in the Torah, so you can go find them yourself. Let's take a look at the 10. The first is loipili isha miriach basara kodesh. We wouldn't want that kachim would be responsible for the death of a baby, right? Along the lines of shluchei mitzvah inu nizakin, if we say that by mitzvot in general, so all the more so by kachim. The meat of the korbanot never became rotten and smelly, even though it was left for a day, for 2 days. There were never flies seen in the place where they processed the meat. All these things are not nisim gluyim, but they are special. The rain never put out the fire on the mizbeach. The wind never managed to break the pillar of smoke. It rose from the Mizbeach. You guys want to hear something cool?
Yeah.
when, just make sure I get this right, when the Israeli army attacked last in Lebanon, I think it was called Mifza Amud Anan.
Yeah.
Right. The cloud of a pillar of, pillar cloud. Amud Anan. So here you have this model of the Ruach, that's coming up from the Ketorah, that's going straight. The wind isn't breaking it, so it symbolizes the relationship between what we're doing below and above. There was never a psul in the Korban Omer, the Shtei Alechem Lechem Apanim. Omdim tsefufin u'mishtachavim rivachim. When they would stand in Yerushalayim, in the times when there were a lot of Jews there, let's say during the Regalim, they would be very tight. But when they bowed down, there was always enough room for everyone. There are a lot of people who are medayak that it should be the opposite, no? When do people need more room? When they're spread out, right? But the point is obvious. When each one's standing on his own, everyone needs their own space. When everyone's mishtachava, then there's enough room for everyone. V'lo hizik nachash ve'akrav b'Yerushalayim me'olam, v'lo amar adam l'chaveiro tzar li ha'makom she'olim b'Yerushalayim. What's strange about the last line of this Mishnah?
All the other ones seem like it's supernatural, but how could God have made it that he always had somewhere to stay? Like, he can't tell someone to put someone else up.
I mean, how could he affect people?
Yeah.
Okay, you could say that, but I think there's a bigger difference between the last line and the earlier lines. And the whole last line, in fact.
It's not a
kachteva, or something beferish in the Mishnah, not a descriptive. What?
It's not the mikdash.
It's not the mikdash. It's Yerushalayim.
So logic hashvacha.
Yerushalayim.
Oh, you're saying
so. It starts off Asarani sim nasu lavotenu beveta mikdash, and it mentions eight things that were in the Beit Mikdash, and then it talks about things that were in Yerushalayim.
But it's affiliated to the...
Okay, so you could say Yerushalayim is connected to the Mikdash. We find that in a number of places in Halakha. The Gemara in Yoma asks this question, third source on the page. Patach b'Mikdash v'siyem b'Yerushalayim. The Gemara there says, well, there were two other Nisim, not listed by our version of the Mishnah, that happened in the Mikdash. And that's very nice, but of course it doesn't answer the question, right? Okay, there were 10, but why does the Mishnah mention two things that didn't happen in Yerushalayim? I think the simplest explanation is that these things were connected to the Aliyah L'Regel experience. We don't want that when a person comes Aliyah L'Regel, they should be damaged, they should be hurt, they should feel tight. And so ultimately it's connected to the Mikdash even though it's describing Yerushalayim. Now here comes the key question, but this will conclude this Mishnah. Why? Why were these things done? What was the purpose? Everything up till now we understand very well. But why these things? What would you say?
About Yerushalayim or anything? Or
the Mikdash and Yerushalayim, all the things described here.
To make sure that everybody knows that it's a special place.
So the simple pshat is, right, that it's to show you the specialness of that place. I think one can sharpen it a little bit further based on the Gemara in Shabbat of Chaf Bet, which relates to another nace that happened in the Mikdash, interestingly not mentioned in the Mishnah. The Gemara there asks, why there was a mitzvah to light the menorah in the Mikdash? God doesn't need our light. He provided light for the Jewish people for 40 years. The Gemara answers, Ela eduti levae olam shashchina shorab Yisrael. It was a testimony of the relationship of the Shechinahs residing amongst the Jewish people. How was it a testimony? Rav explains that there was a westernmost candle in the menorah, into which the same amount of oil was put as all the other lights. They would light the western one most first. All the other wicks were lit from that one, and yet the western candle outlit all of them and remained lit. This, by the way, is the inspiration for the Ner Tamid, right? The Ner that's always lit, that represents God's Shechinah. Amongst us, we have to get a Ner Tamid. Remind me, we have to get a Ner Tamid. No? In any case, these miracles aren't just showing it's a special place. I agree with what Avia said, it's a special place. But also the special relationship between God and the Jewish people. So, you know, this happened in the Beit Mikdash, and it was a very special time, and we don't have any of this, right? As we say in the keynote on Tisha B'Av, right? We don't have the Kohen or the Mizbeach or all these things. But there's a very interesting tshuva written by the Tashbitz, one of the Algerian Rishon, bottom page 313. He's discussing whether the Kedusha and the Mikdash and Yerushalayim continues to exist today or not. So he has a whole halachic discussion, and then he ends the tshuva by saying, you can bring a little bit of a smach, support, and a raya, that the Kedusha still exists. Why? Because there are still people who are aliyah l'regel to Yerushalayim, interestingly, you're proving it from the fact that people are going, and they say that even when they go, the nisim of Yerushalayim continue. Which one? We don't have the smoke of the Mizbeach or the meat of the Korbanos. It says that people don't complain that they don't have enough room. He says, and it's surprising, because the shuls in Yerushalayim are needed for the local people, he writes. And they're full all year round. Yet, for example, on Shavuot, it seems a lot of people went on Shavuot, there were more than 300 additional people who come up, writes the Tashbitz. You see it there? Bottom of the page. They all come in, and there's enough room for everyone. And this shows you that it's still in its Kedusha, and it's the siman of the Geula Shlishit. Interesting phrase. You see how significantly the Rishonim saw the fact that, what was the number I mentioned?
300
people went to Yerushalayim for Shavuot, and there was room for them. It's a sign of the Geula Shlishit. It's ironic that today when, how many people go to Israel for Shavuot? Maybe 3,000? 10,000? I don't know, right? Or Sukkot or Pesach. Is there room for everybody? There's room for everybody. How could you not see it as a sign of the Kedusha continuing and of the Geula Shlishit? It's only because the Zionist movement was taken over by irreligious and anti-religious people, that religious people have to find excuses to not see things as being what they really are, right? Okay, so that's interesting modern application of this. Asarani Sim Nasu Labotenu Veta Mikdash. Are we ready for Mishnah Vav? Mishnah Vav is the last of the tens. And it's interesting because it kind of bookends the first of the tens. Because the first one was? The ten ma'amarot, the ten stages, and here we're talking about
ten things
that were created at the end of the creation process, right? Erev Shabbat Ben Hashmashot. The ten things that were created. The obvious question is, why? Hey, why create anything in Ben Hashmashot? I mean, why were they created then? What's the significance of this? What's this category of things that were created in Ben Hashmashot? So the Rambam, and many other Rishonim based on the Rambam, saw this as being a statement about the relationship between nature and miracles. On the one hand, we say, Ein chadash tachat ha-shemesh, right? The Pasuk in Kohelet. There's nothing new in the world. And this was a principle, a philosophical principle, that people like Aristotle, with the Rambam, we know, took a lot of stock in, believed that the world is consistent, there's nature, it doesn't change. On the other hand, we believe in Nisim. So what's Pshat? So the Rambam says that's the point of this Mishnah. The Rambam in his commentary on the Mishnah says that these things that would eventually be Nisim were already created as part of the creation of the world. So it's not altering nature because they're part of nature. The Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim has a much lengthier discussion of this. And he adds there that this Mishnah doesn't cover all the Nisim that occurred down the line. Can anyone mention an example of a Nes not covered by one of these things here? For example, Pia Aretz. What's that?
Korach.
What? That's Korach. Pia Be'er. The water in the Midbar. Pia Aton. Bilam.
Okay.
Keshet. The Man. The Matev. Moshe. The Shamir. The magical worm that cut stone, right, for the Mikdash. Haktav v'amichtav on the Luchot themselves. What other physical things were a great Nisim? How about the splitting of Yamsuf? It's not mentioned here. The Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim that the things not mentioned here, they were built into the nature of the things when they were created. Meaning, when Hashem created the Yamsuf, He built in the switch that would one day open for the Jewish people. The Rambam also speaks there, towards the end of the piece on the top of page 315, that we, on the one hand, respect Aristo, but we accept half of his opinion. His opinion is that the world is fixed and cannot change. We don't believe that. We believe there are Nisim. They're just built into the system. That's how he concludes the piece. He also makes clear it's not that God cannot change. He can change anything he wants. He just chooses to build all these things within the natural system. The Rambam brings a particular midrash, but there's a number of midrashim. If you look at page 315, the midrash there, Midrash Tanchuma, speaks about God's way of creating the sky. When God created the sky, He told the sky, you will rain down based upon what the people deserve. So for example, on the people of Sodom, you'll rain down Gufret Fesh. For the Jewish people, you'll rain down Tal. So it's not an aberration of nature for the sky to rain fire. It's built in as part of its potential. Medrash Rabbah, the second source of Bible, page 315.
But why do we daven?
We daven that that's what it should rain.
But if it's already pre-mist, I mean...
It doesn't mean that this, when we're deserving, it will rain downtown, right? Medrash Rabbah also speaks about here the splitting of the sea. And it says that when God created Yam Suf, he made a condition with it that it would one day split. And this example of Yam Suf, this example of Yam Suf is the basis of the Medrash speaking about the way God created all of nature. Let's look at the bottom of the page. Om Rabbi Yochanan. Tanoyin hitna kadosh baruch hu imayam. God made a condition with the sea. She had nikra lefnei Yisrael when he created it. That's why it says, Vayashav ha'am le'etano litna'o shehitna'imo. That's the drush of Chazal. Rabbi Yirmiya ben Elazar then says, Lo imayam bilvad itna kadosh baruch hu. Ela im kol ma shenivra b'sheshet yimei b'reshit. And then there are examples given here about how the Shamayim va'aretz, the sun, the ravens, the light, the lions, the fish, the sky, all these things that would need to be involved in miracles, and Midrash lists each of them and how they were involved in miracles, they were conditioned from the very beginning for that potential. This is also the way, page 316, Rabbeinu Bechaya and the Kuzari and Rabbeinu Yonah, they all discuss this balance that the Rambam set, you know, explained based on this Mishnah. But what obvious question about our Mishnah comes up in light of this point of the Rambam, that all of the Nisim are based on the way God conditioned things already in the time of creation. What obvious question comes up? Why are these 10 special, right? Why are Dafka these 10 things the ones created in Benesh Mashot? So the Rambam himself relates to this question. Let's go back to page 314. The third paragraph from the first piece of the Rambam here. V'ulai tomar, acharei shekol haniflot kulam, husmu b'tivei hadvarim, since all of the miracles were rooted in nature, in the nature of things, lami yichrei lo asara, why are these 10 special? The Rambam writes, da shelo yichteim lomar she'en shum mofet she'usam b'teva hadvarim rak elu. The implication is not that these are the only things embedded in nature. Aval amar she'elu nasu benesh mashot levad. These are unique because they were created in Benesh Mashot. Because the difference is, the potential for the Yam Suf splitting was already built in to the Yam when it was created on the second day. The potential for the sun staying begivon when Yeshua needed it to stay up was embedded in the sun's creation on day 4. These things were Benesh Mashot.
Then why would
and the question still becomes,
when you create the animals,
right, meaning what things did God embed initially and what things did God create in Benesh Mashot? Meaning, the Rambam explains the difference categorically, just doesn't explain why there are different categories. And this is the question that the Meiri asks on the Rambam. Page 317. Rabbeinu Bechaya asks the question, the Meiri asks the question. And there's a number of answers here, a number more in the Achronim, but I want to show you the major approaches of the Rishon. First is the Maram Chalava. I assume none of you ever heard of. It was one of the Spanish Rishonim. He has a Pirush on Masechet Pesachim. He was a Talmud of the Ramban. So he says the major difference here is that all the other things wasn't making a special creation. God didn't have to make a special creation for Yam Suf to split. It was just defining the conditions of the Yam Suf. God didn't make a special creation for the sun to stay up or for the sky to rain down sulfur. It was just that these creations would function in this alternative way. The things mentioned in the Mishnah, says the Maram Chalava, weren't conditions, if we go back to that Medrash that we saw, the Tnoyim that Hashem made with His creations, they were briot. They were things, special creations that God made. A special worm, and a special stick, and a special donkey. It wasn't donkeys have the potential to speak. Donkeys do not have the potential to speak. God created a special donkey. That's a very, you know, nice approach, but it definitely isn't the approach that all the Rishonim had. In fact, if you look back at the Rabbeinu Bechaya for a second on page 316, he writes beferish that there's no difference between the way the Mishnah refers to the things being Nivru'u and the way the Mishnah refers to the things being Al-Tnai. They're all the same thing. That's why the Meiri himself suggests a couple of other approaches. If you look at the sixth line, the Meiri on page 317, he says, I still have the question. Why weren't the Pia Haaretz and the Pia Be'er created on the days when those things were created? So first he suggests something for the Rambam that he doesn't like so much, and then he gives his own approach. So let's first see what he says for the Rambam, and then we'll see what he says himself. He says, V'efshar, Shepia Be'er u'Pia Haaretz, Ikar mitziutam lahanish v'ligmol b'nei Adam shenivru bashishi. V'chein shar advarim. V'kavanat ha-ma'amar l'kvo b'lvavot emunat gmul v'onesh. The Meiri explains for the Rambam, maybe these things are special because they were created to punish and reward people who were created on the sixth day. So after people were created on the sixth day, the special mechanisms that would reward and punish those people were created after them. And now he goes on to explain why these particular things were rewards and punishments. Okay. The question he asks on the Rambam is, there are certain things here that aren't miraculous though. Like the rainbow, or the Avram's ram, or the kever of Moshe. How do these prove schar v'onesh? That's why the Meiri himself gives another approach, which we'll conclude with. He says, the things mentioned in this list are things that were needed for the survival of the Jewish people and their success. And that's why they were given special notice by being created Bein HaShemeshot, so that we should realize that when God created the world, He already took into account the things the Jewish people would need in their travels, in their days. That we should appreciate how our needs, both punishments and rewards, are taken account initially. So it's not the purpose of punishing and rewarding, but it's the purpose of taking care, anticipating, and already building into creation the things that will end up being the needs of the Jewish people in the future. And he says the purpose of including all this is for us to realize how God takes into account our needs already from the time of creation. Okay, this concludes the list of tens. The next Mishnah talks about the seven things, it's on page 318, the seven attributes of a golem versus the seven attributes of a chacham. And Pashup Shat, this Mishnah is next because we're moving from?
Tens to seven.
Ten to seven. Later we're going to go to four. That's the Pashup Shat. There are others who try and give other explanations. And we're moving into a very different realm now about what typifies, what are the characteristics of a chacham. I guess we'll do this next time. Are people going to bring their sheets next time? That's too much to expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. Okay, that is so.